Well, this morning we'll be in chapter 30 of Proverbs. We're getting right down close to the end. So I will begin to read this, and we'll go back and break it down and show the relevance of our lives today in this. But I want you to know that the first verse is really not the first verse. The first verse is just a statement that someone added on in the translators. Okay? There's some words there that have some meanings to it, and I will break it down and show it to you. But actually, the statement starts in the second verse. Okay? The words of Agur, the son of Jakeh, even the prophecy, the man spoke unto Ithiel, even to Ithiel and Ucal. Surely I am more brutish than any man, and have not the understanding of a man. I neither learned wisdom, nor have the knowledge of the holy. Who has ascended up into the heavens or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fists? Who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? What is his name, and what is his son's name, if you can tell? Every word of God is pure. He is a shield to them that put their trust in him. Add thou not to his words, lest thou reprove he reprove you, and you be found a liar. Two things have I required of you, deny me them not before I die. Remove far from me vanity and lies, give me neither poverty nor riches, feed me with food convenient for me. Lest I be full and deny you, and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal, and take the name of my God in vain. Accuse not a servant unto his master, lest he curse you and you be found guilty. There is a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. There is a generation that are pure in their own eyes and yet is not washed from their filthiness. There is a generation, oh, how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. There is a generation whose teeth are as swords and their jaw teeth as knives, to devour the poor from off the earth and the needy from among men. The horse leech has two daughters, crying, give, give. They are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, four things say not it is enough. The grave, the barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and a fire that says not it is enough. The eye that mocks his father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles shall eat it. There be three things which are too wonderful for me, yea, they four which I know not. The way of an eagle in the air, the way of a serpent upon a rock, and the way of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the way of a man with a maid. Such is the way of an adulterous woman. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I have done no wickedness. For three things the earth is disquieted, and for four which it cannot bear. For a servant when he reigns, and a fool when he is filled with meat. For an odious woman when she is married, and a handmaiden that is an heir to her mistress. There be four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their meat in the summer. The conies are a feeble folk, yet they make their houses in the rocks. The locusts have no king, yet they go forth all of them by bands. The spider takes hold of her with her hands and is in king's palaces. There be three things which go well, yea, four are comely and going. A lion, which is strongest among the beasts and turns not away for any. A greyhound, and he goat also, and a king against whom there is no uprising. If you have done foolishly in lifting up yourself, or if you have thought evil, lay your hand upon your mouth. Surely the churning of milk brings forth butter, and the wringing of the nose brings forth blood. So the forcing of wrath brings forth strife. Now let's go back and see what's going on. Now we're coming to the end of this man's writings, and he's beginning to give us a lot more wisdom. By this point, we should understand more about what he's trying to tell us in this language. What is these writings about? How are they going to help us mature in everything? Okay? So again, back to that first verse, the words of Agur. Agur means gatherer. He's a gatherer, the son of Jakeh. And Jakeh means obedient or blameless. And of course, if you're obedient, you would be what?
Blameless.
You would be blameless. Even the prophecy, or literally it should say the oracle, or the word spoken, the man spoken to Ithiel, Ithiel means God has arrived. Even to Ithiel and Ucal. Ucal means devoured. Okay? So if God has arrived, what would he do with you? He devours you. You become one, don't you?
Yeah, you say the Christ tonight.
Yeah. It's all about the Christ. Okay. And as soon as God, as this happens in this first verse here, he comes out and he says, surely I, in verse 2, I am more, not brutish, but the word is stupid. I am more stupid than any man and have not the understanding of man. I don't understand man. Well, let me tell you something. I don't think anybody in the natural state understands man. Because humanity is the craziest thing God ever created. It's free entertainment if you can sit back and watch it. It's pretty good. He said, surely I'm more brutish than any man, or stupid than any man, and have not the understanding of man. I neither learned, and the word learned is not correct. It should say, I neither have been taught wisdom. Okay? You can't learn wisdom, you have to be taught wisdom. Nor have the knowledge or nor know the knowledge of God. He said, I'm stupid, I don't understand man, I haven't been taught any wisdom, and I don't know the knowledge of God. Is this a man becoming honest, would you think?
Yeah.
It's a man that's saying, hey, I haven't got it. If I got anything, it came from God. And so far, I don't know anything. And this is now he's becoming, toward the end of his writing, when you would think, well, he's starting to understand something. And he's finding out, I really don't know much. God's got it all. And I got a little bit here. And I realize I don't know a whole lot. He says, who has ascended up into the heavens or the sky or descended? Who has gathered the wind in his fists or who has bound the waters in a garment? Who has established all the ends of the earth? Did he say part of them or all of them? What is his nature and character? And what is his son's nature and character? If you know, it should say. If you know.
Is he talking to himself here?
Well, he is talking to himself. He's talking to humanity. So the answer would be yes. He's talking to himself and to the rest of humanity. And if humanity realizes and starts to wise up, if they realize, we don't know what it's about yet. We really don't. The book says God's ways are far above our ways. His mind is above our minds.
And so we should get like this, be honest with
ourselves. Be honest with ourselves, humble ourselves down, and let God then begin to really pour it in. Because it's not going to pour in until we humble ourselves. In the pride and arrogance that's down here below in chapter 11 through 14 or 15, whatever. Those are the things he's going to show you, the weaknesses that we have to be able to see in our own lives. Not that we look at somebody else and judge them. We might be able to see that, but that's not the point. The point is, I have to see it in my life. If I can't see the weakness in my life, looking at somebody else and throwing a rock at them won't do any good.
We have to be teachable.
Absolutely. We got to be teachable.
Honest with ourselves, we become teachable.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Verse 5, it goes on to say, every word of God. Now, the word God here is not what everybody always says, theos. This word is Eloah. Okay, or it's not Yahweh or whatever the other words, all the other words they use. This word is Eloah. It's number 433 in the Hebrew language, in the dictionary, Strong's. But it says, every word of the one true God. So they're making the designation here, not just any God that somebody comes up with, but yet the one true God is what? And literally it says, or tested. Every word of the one true God is pure, or it's tested. When God gives us a word and settles it into our heart, now it's got to be one thing, what? Tested. Until it's tested, I'm not sure if it's truth or not, am I? I got to find out. I got to get confirmation that what God put in me is real. And that's not doubting God. That's the way it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to experience whatever God places in my life so that I know it's not just something He gave me, but I know it as a reality and a fact that this is the way it is. Okay?
Before you go out and
that's right.
do this, you need that confirmation.
I need the confirmation.
This is right.
Absolutely. That's why he said to study to show ourselves approved unto God, a workman need not be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. I need to know that what God spoke to me is there. And not just something somebody said, whether it's true or not. I need to verify that it's true in my life. Okay, it says in the rest of verse 5, he is a shield or a what? He's a protector to them that put their trust in him. When we trust ourselves in God, God's word will take care of us, won't it?
Yes.
It'll just take care of us. I don't know how it works. God just said he would if I did, so if I'm doing what he tells me to do, if I'm obedient, do I have anything to worry about? Nope. Well, what if I see something bad happen? So, bad things happen to good people every day, don't they? And if we got enough sense to understand it, those negative things are creating a better person in me. How am I going to deal with it? Am I going to fall apart and squall and bawl, or am I just going to go on with life and do what I got to do?
These negative things take your temperature to show you how far along you are. In
Absolutely. That test will tell you what you've learned so far, or what you lack so far. Verse 6, it said, add thou not to his words, lest he reprove you and you be found a liar. So, you know, there's a lot of people in the church realm that God said everything. God said everything. God didn't say it. All you have to do is know the nature and character of God, and you're going to hear somebody say something, and you're going to say, God didn't say that, and I know he didn't. See, your spirit's not going to lie to you. Yep.
Change it and whatever. And it sure comes back to bite them.
It'll bite them in the end. Yeah. That's no pun either. That's not a pun either. It'll bite them in the end. Okay. Two things have I asked of you. Deny me them not before I die. He said, I've only asked for two things in life. Please. And you know, I said this in my life. I didn't even know there was a Bible. You know, when I was a kid, I said, you know, I saw people, and I got to see this very well when I was a child. I was very poor. And I got to see people that had a lot of money. And everybody that had a lot of money had more problems than I did. So I never had a desire, and I just thank God for that, that I never had a desire to be rich. I've had many opportunities to be very wealthy through my life. All I had to do was a little dishonesty. Just a little bit, you know. But I can't compromise. It don't work. You know, for me, it don't work. Somebody else, go for it. If that's your thing, go for it. But I never had the desire to be wealthy. And this has not got anything to do with religion or doing anything bad, but I've never desired to play the lottery. I've never, and it doesn't make me better than anybody else, I just never had a desire to buy a lottery ticket. If God wants me to have something, God will get it to me, and I don't have to do anything to get it. If God has a gift for me, I'm sure he has a delivery method to get it here. Okay? I'm not worried about it. He can use UPS or FedEx or anything he wants to, you know. It's like I had a guy call me one time, and he said, do you accept credit cards? And I said, are you going to send me one? He said, no, I was just going to send you some money with credit card. And I said, well, I'm sorry, I don't do that. And I said, if you look at my website, there's no provision, no asking for money about it. And I said, here's the way I feel about it. I appreciate the offer. And he was going to send me a sizable amount of money. But I said, here's the way I see it. If God wants you to get that money to me, you'll get it to me. If not, you won't. And you know what? It doesn't make any difference to me because I'm going to get what God wants me to have, whether you do it or somebody else makes it up for you. It doesn't make any difference. Well, the guy never did send anything. Well, it's okay. I don't remember who it was. Don't care. Because it wasn't important. If God wanted it, see, and I think there was an ulterior motive in there, something else anyway, but I'm going to get into that. But I don't worry about what God's going to do. God will give me what I need when I need it. And that's always been in my heart. I don't understand it. There's a lot of things that's been in my heart since I was a little kid in my mind. And I can think these things and say, you know, now I'm seeing why. Now I'm understanding why I was shaped this way, what I had to go through to get here. And I'm not complaining. It's wonderful now that I understand God has been shaping my life since I was a little child. I didn't know that then. You know, I didn't have that understanding. I do now. And I can look back and thank God for all the things he gave me in life, or the things I had to go through to make me where I am today. I thank God that I'm not shaken by all the circumstances of life.
Well, if you look at this where Solomon wrote Proverbs, yeah, he's always shaped from
his circumstances,
his early life,
sure,
through the things around him, and now, you know, he is putting down the wisdom he's learned or those things shaped him.
Absolutely. And I can witness to a lot of the things that he's going through, and that's what this is about, for us to learn how to find the witness in here to encourage ourselves to continue on. Okay? So when he said in verse 8, remove far from me vanity. Now this word vanity is not really a good word for this. The translation is not really right. It should say, remove far from me deception and lies. Okay? From deception and lies, give me neither poverty nor riches, but feed me with food. And the word convenient here doesn't do it justice. Literally, you know what it says? Prescribed.
This, the R says a lot.
Who, what's that say?
A lot.
Okay. But the language says, feed me with food prescribed for me, and I added something on the end because it's implied. Who prescribed it for me?
God.
There you go. So, feed me with food prescribed for me by God, by himself. Okay. By God himself. And only in verse 9 he says, lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and take the nature and character of my God in vain. See, if I'm denying God, or if I'm poor and steal and take the nature of God in vain, or and taking the nature of God in vain, the name of God in vain, is not the words that the church world says, don't use this word, don't use that word, God's name in vain. Don't say JC or GD or all them things, you know. Don't, that's ridiculous. That's not what it's about. It's about taking the nature and character of God in vain. And when you take the nature and character of God in vain, it's like saying I'm a child of God, but I'm living like a child of the world. That's taking his nature in vain. I have Jesus in me. I have Christ in me, but I live like the world. Come on, something's wrong here. See, that's taking the nature and character, the name of God in vain. And they don't see it because they're reading the shallowness of the word. They're not getting involved in it. Not into the intimate relationship.
That's what we were talking earlier about. They possess it in a different way.
They possess some form of it, but they haven't matured it. They haven't cultivated it in their lives. Okay, verse 10, accuse or slander, should be slander. Slander not a servant to his master, lest he curse you and you be found guilty. See, slander is not just saying something bad, but slander is a false accusation. See, with the intent to do harm. You see what I'm saying? Telling the truth. Now, if I was come in and say, Lloyd, you're a liar. If I was to say that, that would be slander, right? Because
yeah.
You're not a liar.
No.
Okay, but now, if you told me a lie, and I come in and said, you know, Lloyd's a liar because he lied to me, and with the fact I can prove you lied, is that slander? No. It's a revealing of a fact, the truth that you would have lied to me, right? I'm just showing that as an example that, you know, people think because you say something negative, it's in their perception that you slandered them. Slander is that malicious lie with the intent to do harm to somebody. But to reveal the truth, it's not slander, is it? Just let them know the truth. And I've been blamed a lot of time in my life for revealing things about people that needed to be revealed because they were pretty wicked things that people need to know to protect themselves. If someone's a liar or a thief, it's okay to say that person, you can't trust them. You need to not deal with them financially or whatever. Don't trust them with something that is valuable. Okay. Verse 11. There is a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. Well, let's go back to Exodus 20, verse 12, and see what it says. Exodus 20, 12. We'll find out. So you know what Exodus 20 is, don't you? That's the Ten Commandment one. Okay? Here's what people understand. It says, there's a generation that curses their father and does not bless their mother. Look what the 12th verse of chapter 20 of Exodus says. Honor your father and your mother, that your days may be long upon the land which the Lord thy God has given you. Okay? Now, let's do the flip-flop method. And the flip-flop is, if you do not honor your father and mother, your days will not be long upon the earth that the Lord has given you. Right? So there's a generation that's having lots of problems, and it's because of a lack of respect to their elders. And we're in that generation right now. This is just the beginning of this right here in verse 11 of Proverbs chapter 30. And verse 12 goes on and says, there is a generation that are pure in their own eyes, and yet is not washed from their filthiness. That's the arrogance of the generation today. It's there. It's been here all along, but it's just getting more and more prevalent. Our society has become numb to all the things. I mean, you see people running around, they don't have any clothes on, boys wearing their pants clear down over the cheeks of their butt. You know, it's ignorance. It's not a style, it's ignorance. They're trying to just do something for shock value to somebody. You know, tattoos on them where you can't even see what they look like. Like the girl recently woke up, she told the story, she woke up and she had 39 stars on her face tattooed. And she said, she told her parents, lied, told her parents, she fell asleep in the chair. How do you fall asleep if somebody's poking holes in your face? And, I mean, to believe that first would have been insane, like she was drunk or drugged up. The guy put 39 stars on her, you know, over half of her face was covered with stars. Well, later comes out, a few days later, they finally put the pressure on her, and she said, yeah, I really wanted them. You know, I told him to put them on there. I mean, why? Why would, and she was a beautiful young lady, why would she have to mangle her face, defame herself, you know, to do that? But they're all doing it, and they think it's cool, just to mark up their bodies. Trying to fit in, but I'd be stupider than somebody else, you know. I appreciate people's got enough guts to stand up and do what's right, regardless of what the rest of them do. You know, that picture about going against upstream against the flow and everything, that's just the way God takes us. And that's okay with me. Verse 13, there is a generation, oh how lofty are their eyes, and their eyelids are lifted up. And there's two words that should be added on at the end of that. Their eyelids are lifted up in arrogance. It's arrogance. Verse 14 goes on and says, there is a generation whose teeth are swords and their jaw teeth as knives. When did you ever see such little children stand up and curse their parents? I mean, little tiny kids just call them every kind of name in the world and the parents just look at them. That's when I would be preparing the dentist to make some plastic teeth for the kids. You know? I told my children once, they got on my wife, and I told the girl, I picked her up by the front of her blouse, right in the neck right there, and just picked her right up off the floor. I said, I'm bigger and meaner than you will ever be, and if you ever speak to your mother again, I will take those pearly whites and knock them out of your head, and I'll buy you some plastic ones to put into place. Now, you ever talk to your mother again like that, and you will not have those pearly whites. You'll have plastic teeth from here on out.
It's like a circle. I mean, they've gone overboard from one way to the other. Like, they're afraid to discipline because, God forbid, somebody might turn them in as child abuse. But it's more of an abuse when you're not teaching them any type of respect.
Yeah, much more of abuse.
And it just goes around and around.
And just gets worse and worse.
Yeah, it's going to get really mad.
Yep. I'm just glad I'm in a generation where it wasn't there. Yeah, I'm glad for that, but because I'd be in prison because I'd take the hide off their rear ends. Okay, they have those knives for teeth to devour the poor. And this word poor here doesn't necessarily mean without money. It literally says the depressed in mind or circumstances. It could be several things there, couldn't it? Not just money. From off the earth, and the needy from humanity. And see, today, it's the same everywhere. They try to eliminate the poor class of people. Is that true? They'd like just move them plumb off the earth, send them out in the ocean, let them drown or something, get rid of them.
Because you're poor, don't make no sign you can't think.
No, There's a lot of poor people that have excellent thinking processes, love God, they just don't have the circumstances. And except for the grace of God, we could be in the same situation. We're where we are by the grace of God. Verse 15, the horse leech has two daughters crying, give, give. There are three things that are never satisfied. Yea, four says not that it is enough. And it should say, it's not enough wealth, is what it says. Verse 16 goes on to say, it says, the grave. Now this word grave here is the same word Sheol that they translate hell. So which is it? It's grave. The barren womb, the earth that is not filled with water, and we could say, you know, we could go back and look at this, the grave, and what is the grave but a pit, and that pit's right between our ears. The barren womb, non-productive, no life-giving, no life-reproducing, that's the carnal man, isn't it, the carnal mind? It can't produce life because the carnal mind is death, isn't it? And the earth, that's us, it's not filled with water, which is the word, right? And the fire that says not is enough. The fire is a good thing, but the fire is always going to destroy the hay, the wood, and the stubble, isn't it? That's its job, to burn that stuff up. That's something God has set up.
Refiner.
It's a refiner, yep. If you get rid of the hay, wood, and stubble, guess what you got left? Gold, silver, and precious stones. Go to 1 Corinthians chapter 3, I think it is, where 11, where it says that. Okay, verse 17. The eye that mocks at his at a father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out and the young eagles shall eat it. Now look at this. The eye. How do you spell that? E-Y-E or the big capital I. See, that's ego of man, isn't it? The eye. And that's the one. Only someone in ego could be disrespectful to his father and mother. Isn't that right? It's that ego of man, the self-man. And said, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out, and the young eagles will eat it. Don't need to expound that in any way. There be three things which are too wonderful. The word wonderful is difficult. The word, put the word difficult in there, because that's what the language literally says in the Hebrew.
Huh? Totally opposite than wonderful.
Absolutely. But it the word can mean either or, and the word wonderful takes it way out of whack. Where the things that's too difficult for him to understand is what he's talking about. For which I know not. The course of an eagle in the air or the sky, the course of a serpent upon a rock, and the course of a ship in the midst of the sea, and the course of a man with a woman, with a maid. He's saying, I don't understand all these things. I don't understand how God did what he did, why he did what he did. He's saying they're just too difficult for me to try to understand them things. I don't understand how a snake can crawl up on a rock. It don't have any hands to hold on, but its body, it can do things with them little joints all through his belly, you know. And today we have probably got much more science involved. We can understand some of that stuff. But he's just saying, too difficult for me, but yet God created the whole thing.
Well, isn't he really pointing out the natural man's mind?
Yes, absolutely. He's saying, I in my natural state know nothing. See, that's where he went back in that second verse and said, I'm stupid. Yeah, I don't know anything. Verse 20. And it should say, this is the course of, and what? Literally, an idolatrous woman. Not adulteress, but idolatrous. That idolatrous and adulteress can mean basically the same thing. They're unfaithful. Idolatrous is speaking of being unfaithful to God. Adulteress is speaking in the natural realm, isn't it? Being an adulterous woman, being unfaithful to her man. Well, in the church world, the idolatry, is adultery. She eats and wipes her mouth and says, I have done no wickedness. Yeah.
About eyes.
The eye is working. That ego of humanity, just it's all about self. And the sorry thing about that is that the people that function in this ego have no idea they're doing it. They have no idea. They're totally oblivious to what they're doing. They think they have a right to be the center of everything.
It's all justified.
In their minds, it's all justified, absolutely. Verse 21, for three things the earth is disquieted and for four which it cannot bear. Notice that it said three things the earth is disquieted. What is the earth? That's us. That's us. That we're made from the earth. And the first thing it says, for a servant when he reigns. One of the translations, let me read it out of another translation here. Let me find it. Here it is. There are three things that make the earth tremble. No, four, it cannot stand. A slave who becomes a king. Now, why is he saying a slave who becomes a king?
Because of the authority that they have.
They don't know how. They've never learned anything in respect, you know. And a lot of times when you take somebody from the lowest realm and jump them to the highest realm with no learning process in between, they can become a very wicked ruler, can't they? Just like when King Saul became king.
They try to retaliate.
They try to force that power, and they take, they abuse their power, put it that way. Mm-hmm. They abuse their power.
Pride comes
forth. Yep. And then a fool when he is filled with meat or food. That's like a rebel, and in the Living Bible says, a rebel who prospers. Someone who's going against God and yet still prospers. You know, we see it all the time.
Yeah.
I see people who are the biggest rebels you would ever see. They refuse to pay taxes. They just do everything underhanded, under the table, and yet they just seem like they're always prospering. You know what I mean? But yet, who's kidding who? They got their reward now, haven't they? I'm not trading it for my other side. Okay, verse 23. For an odious woman when she is married. That literally says a hateful or bitter woman when she is married. So when a woman gets married, what is it trying to imply here in the natural? That there should be some kind of a meeting of the minds. And I agree that it should be both. A meeting of the minds of both. Would you agree?
Yes.
It should be both. But let's look at this on the spiritual side. Once we marry Christ, that makes us the woman, right? We're the bride, he's the man. When we marry our marriage to Christ, then I should be submitted to my husband, shouldn't I?
Right.
See, and that's where the spiritual side of coming in and saying, I've said many years ago that a woman will never submit to the Christ in her until she submits to the Christ in her, she will never submit to her natural husband. I have to submit to the Christ in me before I'll ever submit to my natural side. That make sense? And the church uses it to beat up all the women, saying if you're not obedient to your husband, you're going to hell, you're in rebellion, everything. But he's talking spiritual things here, not talking the natural thing. But if a woman is in submission to the Christ in her, who else will she be in submission to?
Mm-hmm.
Her husband, everybody. Not a problem being submission. Once you're in submission to Christ, you don't have an issue with submitting to anybody else. It's
well,
okay.
That's where the church goes off on that submission one.
Yeah.
They want
take
that
it too far.
Yeah.
Way out there.
She's controlled.
I asked this question a long time ago. What was Paul's first mission?
Submission.
Our first mission should be submission to the Christ within us. Not worrying about all these issues. They tell you, you need to do this, this, this. No, you need to learn to submit. And isn't that what God taught us when he said, I don't want your sacrifice, I want your obedience. And obedience is submission, isn't it? Okay. We got the odious woman, didn't we? The last one there, a handmaid which is heir to her mistress, or a servant girl who marries her mistress's husband. Which she becomes queen, right?
Yeah, we saw that in Abraham and Sarah.
Yep. It don't work.
You can't have a maidservant in the lap of your husband.
Nope, it just don't work. Okay.
Spiritual or natural?
Or natural, yep.
Don't work.
There be four things which are little upon the earth, but they are exceedingly wise. The ants are a people not strong, yet they prepare their food in the summer. That says they have an intelligence level, don't it? They know they have to have food. Cold weather's coming, we're going to get it done. They work day and night. The conies are a feeble folk. Conies, what would you think it is? No, literally it calls it a rock rabbit. A rabbit that lives in the rocks. Well, badgers, rock, they're not absolutely sure, but it really it says, some of them says badgers, some of them says rabbit, rock rabbits. But they're feeble folk, yet they make their houses in the rocks. And they know that the rocks will protect them to some degree. The locusts have no king, yet they go forth, all of them, in ranks. Not by bands, but in ranks. And verse 28 says, and the spider takes hold with her hands and is in king's palaces. Literally, what that word says is lizard.
Yeah,
it says lizard in the language. And it's because the lizards have a type of, some lizards have a type of poisonous, some toxins that are paralyzing, okay? But anyway, for some reason, they still want to put it out as a spider. I don't understand that, but it's not a lizard. The Living Bible says it pretty good. The lizards, they are easy to catch and kill, yet they are even found in a king's palace. And lizards go everywhere, don't they?
In other words, the king just lets them go.
Yeah, he's not worried about them. The king put them here. Verse 29, there be three things which go well, yea, four are comely and going. A lion, which is strongest among the beasts, and turns not away, not for any, but in the presence of any. The word for is panim, which means in the presence. Okay, verse 31. A greyhound is the second one. A he-goat's the third one. And a king against whom there is no raising up or rebellion. There's no rebellion against God, is there? And if Christ is the king, then there's no rising up against him, is there?
Well, I think he's more or less turning around showing you that he really does have the wisdom of God. You can't win him.
He's saying it, but he's admitting and saying that he doesn't have the wisdom, but God has the wisdom. God gives it to us. He's still giving God the credit for all this wisdom. And that's what he's showing.
You can't win.
You can't win. God's going to win. Don't fight him. Verse 32 goes on to say, if you have done foolishly in exalting, not lifting up, but exalting yourself, or if you have thought evil, lay your hand upon your mouth.
There you go.
You know why he said that? Because out of the mouth
he knows he's been there.
Comes everything, don't it?
Once it's out, it's out.
Once it's out, it's out. You can't get it back in. Verse 33, surely it should be because the churning of milk brings forth butter, and the wringing of the nose brings forth blood, so the stirring of anger, not the forcing of wrath, but the stirring of anger brings forth controversy. And see, there's a lot of people that don't sleep well at night if they haven't stirred up controversy. Right?
Drama.
I guarantee you there's drama everywhere. They can't sleep at night without it. We got one more chapter, and next week we should be able to wrap this up, good Lord willing.